Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, and welcome to the 80th episode of Lake of Rage, a Pokemon trading card game podcast. I am your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, aka Mellow _ Magikarp, and I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host. Joining us for the first time, someone we've been trying to get on the show for a little while, we have Grant Manley, aka Trick Roar. Grant, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Mellow.
Thank you for being here. This is one that, you know, we used to record on Tuesdays. That was never good for you. Now the recording on the weekend, we were thankfully able to make this happen. I'm super excited to talk some Pokemon.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah, it's weekends for me is just kind of, you know, in between events. So it works out.
It is. Yeah, because we're at the awkward time of like, there's nothing until LAIC for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the Lost Origin format for me was only 2 weeks pretty much. But I know there's a Lille this past weekend and then Warsaw, but I'm not going to either of those. So yeah, it's LAIC.
So this wasn't on the menu of what we're going to talk about, but you say the Lost Origin format's over. Is Silver Tempest actually going to make a big splash, do you think? Or
yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I was looking at the cards and like at first I thought, I'm like, oh, this set seems pretty good actually. And then I was looking at it a little bit more and I played a few games and yeah, probably not. Like, it doesn't seem like that big of an impactful set, which I think is fine because the past few sets have been like pretty crazy as far as shaking up the game. So I think it's good to have like a kind of a chill set every once in a while that doesn't really alter the landscape of the meta too much, but still has like a few good cards. So like Serena is going to replace Boss, and the Forest Seal Stone card is going to be like a consistency boost to some decks like Mew that doesn't really need it. But yeah, a few upgrades for decks, and then Regieleki maybe with Peekabolt, but I haven't tested that one yet.
That's been my absolute favorite thing. Like exactly what you mentioned, Mew gets significantly better, but we're also getting all these new hype lists coming out of Japan because it's their first week with the whole thing, and it's all these Peekabolt lists with like zero Drapions.
Okay, I haven't taken a look at those yet, but yeah, I'm sure Japan always has some really crazy decks.
They're cool for sure. The Regieleki's sick. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the next set because we don't have a set list yet. We're here to talk to you about the Pokemon trading card game. So since it's your first time here, we're going to get into some rapid strike questions. After that, we're going to talk about your history of the game because you are an incredibly accomplished player. A top cut with Regis is not the first time you've done well in this game at all. And I feel like some post-pandemic people may not know that. And then we're going to get to how Salt Lake City was absolutely dominated by your testing group to an extent that we haven't seen in many years, it feels like. So first, let's get into these rapid strike questions. So you'll have 60 seconds to answer as many as you can straight off the top of your head. No explanation, no thinking, just go. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Am I ready? There we go. All right. Question number one, winter or summer?
Summer.
Favorite snack?
Peanut butter pretzels.
Favorite Pokemon?
Mewtwo.
Favorite deck ever?
Quad Bob Jolteon.
Would you rather be late or be early?
Early.
What is your favorite?
Well, it depends what it's for.
What is your favorite emoji to use? No explanations.
Emoji? Probably. I don't know, maybe like the skull emoji.
How do you like your steak cooked?
Medium rare.
What are the toppings on your perfect pizza? Bro, the hard questions here.
I mean, probably sausage pepperoni, but you can put pineapple on there, but I might get flamed for that one.
Not here. I'm pro pineapple. What color sleeves do you use?
It's different every time.
Juniper, sycamore, oak, rowan, or magnolia?
Juniper.
What was your favorite subject in school?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. They're all pretty bad.
And what's your favorite IC location you've ever been to?
Probably NA, actually.
Did you really just say Columbus, Ohio?
I haven't been to that many ICs, actually.
Wait, really?
I've been to Brazil and Australia. I guess maybe Australia, but I didn't do a whole lot of sightseeing there, so.
Oh, I think actually I've never been either, but I think you missed out for sure. But that
Yeah.
is time. We got through 13 questions. That's not bad. That's a 65% out of 20. That's a D. Good job. That is passing.
Hey.
Let's go ahead and get into your history as a player a little bit, because that's going to get into the question that I wanted to get to from there, your favorite deck ever, because I feel like a lot of people listening to this heard that answer. And if they haven't seen your stream before, or they haven't been playing for, God, like what, 6+ years? They have no idea what that deck is.
Which one? The Wob deck?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I want to start off, how long have you been playing, and what are some of your accomplishments in this game?
I guess it's now been like 12 years and change, I guess. Maybe 11 and change. So I've been playing a really long time. But I wasn't competitive, I guess, until like 2013, which was my first Worlds invite, which was in the seniors division. So that's kind of what I use as my benchmark for like starting competitive play. And then accomplishments. My first year in Masters was pretty good. I got top four at US Nationals. And the year before that, I got top four at Worlds, but that was in seniors, so I guess it doesn't really count. And then just top eight a few regionals. Haven't won one yet, but hoping this season will be the one. Copium. Sorry, was there anything else?
No, that was perfect. That was exactly what we wanted.
Okay.
So I want to go off of that. Let's come back to that favorite deck of all time. Because most people, it's always something like very basic, like a Virizion Genesect, or maybe a Mewtwo Mew Perfection, or something that everyone's heard of. What is a Quad Wob Jolteon?
All right, so yeah, this was like an anti-meta deck that I made for a very specific tournament. It was good for pretty much exactly one tournament. I guess you could say for one format, but that was, I think, the only tournament in that format that I went to. So basically, at the tail end of the Sun and Moon format, the meta was very well defined to be like Decidueye, Darkrai, Volcanion, and then a few Mewtwo and Rayquaza. And those were like kind of the decks at the time. I think it was like 2017. Sun and Moon base set whenever that came out. So for the regional, I made an anti-meta deck. It was basically a deck that was kind of designed to be just beat those decks. And yeah, I was pretty proud of myself because I managed to make a deck that was able to do that. And you used Quad Wob to beat Decidueye Vileplume, which was a deck that was really reliant on abilities, and it didn't run a whole lot of energy. So you'd use a lot of energy removal cards. It's kind of like a stall deck. Sort of, but you would take different approaches in different matchups. So, like Jolteon EX was a defensive Pokemon, same with Glaceon EX. And you would kind of pivot your strategy based on matchups. But overall, it was sort of like a stall slash disruption deck, I guess you could say. And then, yeah, it managed to beat the meta really well, and the meta was very well established at that point. So, it was a pretty strong deck for that tournament. I like to say it's the best deck ever made for a specific tournament. Which might actually be true, but maybe not. It may be a little bit biased. Well, I'm definitely a lot biased, but yeah. So I went through the tournament. I think I was like 12-01, and then like three IDs or something, and
Sheesh.
then one top eight, one top four, and then hit an auto loss in finals, which was a kind of a rogue deck. The Quad Lapras deck had like 12 energy, Energy Recycler, Puzzle of Time, basically for intents and purposes, infinite energy, more than I could handle, and then Lapras could. And then it was also kind of a stall deck, so they had more energy than me and more energy removal than me. So it's kind of like just a really bad matchup. So I had no chance of beating that. So I lost in finals, but still, second place was pretty good. So that was my favorite deck just because of how good it was for that one tournament and the fact that I was able to come up with that one myself. So yeah, definitely a good moment. But I think that was like the best chance to win a tournament that I had. But unfortunately, the James Arnold with his Lapras deck was able to make it to finals and put a stop to that.
Shout out to James, friend of the pod, who has talked about Quad Lapras as his favorite deck as well.
Yeah, he's cool. I like James. He's a nice guy, but yeah, definitely it was not it was probably the most one-sided finals match ever. Like I just was never in a position to even have a chance to win. It was terrible.
What's going through your mind then? Just like, you're playing in the finals. You're like, this is just miserable. Like, how are you feeling? Is that the point where you're just like, second's pretty good, I'm happy? Or are you just like super salty? Like, this sucks. Why did I have to hit this?
Well, honestly, when we were going into top eight, I knew there was going to be a Lapras in top eight. So the first thing I looked for was me, and then where's the Lapras? And I'm like, oh, sweet. I didn't hit Lapras in top eight. And then I look at where exactly he is. I'm like, okay, I don't hit Lapras until finals, and he's still got to get there. So I'm like, okay, well, that's, and then if that happens, you know, I did the best I could. So when James actually did make it to finals, I was like, well, that's too bad. You know, I wish he had lost to someone first, but then I was like kind of resigned to my fate at that point. And no, I wasn't really salty at that point. I was, you know, I knew I was not going to beat that deck if I run into it.
Okay. So you're going into top eight knowing like, I will lose to this thing and that's okay.
Yeah, honestly, a similar thing happened with Reggie's this weekend.
What a good segue into, yeah. Well, I guess before we get into that one, I wanted mention, so you're known as I started playing the game, you are known as an anti-meta deck builder. You're the person where it's like, okay, well, what is Grant Manley playing? Like, what weird concoction does he have that beats the top decks? Do you have any other like examples off the top of your head that's like, this thing was really sick here, this thing was really sick here, beyond the quad wob?
Yeah, there are a few. Seniors, I was like, you can get away with a lot of stuff in seniors. So I played some really crazy decks in seniors. And then I guess for one regional, I top eight with Toads of Vibra, which I was probably the only person in the tournament playing that deck, which was kind of like, there wasn't a whole lot of diversity in like the Pokemon, but like it was just like item lock, a ton of poison damage, and then a bunch of supplementary trainers. So, but that's not exactly the most revolutionary thing. A lot of people played Toad decks. It was just kind of like a different Toad deck. And then there were some Zoroark decks that were able to. Zoroark is just such a broken card. So several times I would top eight with like a Zoroark deck that was like teched out to beat the meta. One good example was there was this one regional, I think it was like in 2018, where I was playing Zoroark Mikargo, and there was Rayquaza was like the most popular deck in the tournament. None of them played Blower or Stadium, so I put in one Shrine of Punishment in the Zoroark deck, which people didn't normally do because Shrine of Punishment hurts your Zoroarks, but it happened to be like the perfect one card counter to Rayquaza because it just let you out trade them, which it was kind of like a deck that you didn't normally just go price trade with, but in that matchup it was like, it was just kind of worked out perfectly. So the craziest thing is definitely the Wob deck. There's nothing quite on that level. And then some other Jolteon decks over time as well. Like Jolteon EX is a very good anti-meta card. Recently it's been really hard because Arceus Inteleon was the biggest deck for a while, and that deck's really hard to counter. And then Palkia was the next one, which is also really hard to counter. And then if you even manage to counter that, then you still have to deal with stuff like Mew, and now Lost Zone deck. So it's been kind of difficult to build an anti-meta deck lately, but I've been trying, but none of it's like, I test a lot of different stuff for a lot of weird stuff for NAIC. Didn't land on the Mewtwo V Union, unfortunately. That would have been cool. but that deck was like the deck that I wish I made, basically. But yeah, that deck was pretty perfect for that tournament.
Oh, the deck was so sick.
Yeah, and then a few decks for I guess Baltimore and Peoria anti-meta decks that are trying, but like none of them are quite like good enough. Reggie's, I kind of consider Reggie's an anti-meta deck because it kind of is, but it also is kind of a meta deck because a lot of people know about the deck. It's not like really crazy or anything, but the way it works is in line with like the same philosophy of an anti-meta deck. Like you have a deck that is like really good targeted into specific like top meta decks, and maybe loses to like a few like random things outside of that, like a few tier twos like Gudra, Flying Pikachu. So yeah,
unfortunately two of the decks that made top eight at Salt Lake City.
Yeah, the really good thing about Reggie's is like, you can actually tech it to be like whatever you want pretty much. So like we teched it to beat Ice Q at Salt Lake. I'm sorry if I'm like jumping ahead of.
No, this was my next question was going to be, why haven't you been playing anti-meta decks this format? And you already got into that. And then I was going to jump into Reggie's. So this is
perfect. Okay, yeah. So yeah, it kind of is an anti-meta deck. We teched it for Ice Q for Salt Lake, which was good for Azul because he ran into three Ice Q. But me and Caleb didn't run into any. I don't think Kid did either. But yeah, so we had Yellhorn and bad Lecky in there for Ice Cube. But if you wanted to tech it for Gudra, you could play Miltank. So Miltank would beat a few of the Gudra lists, and then the ones with Aegislash, you maybe could still beat them by just like playing the game normally and forcing them to commit resources to Aegislash. It would be a little bit worse, but the fact that you can pretty much auto-win a few of the lists anyway with Miltank is pretty good. And then if you wanted to beat Pikachu, you could tech like Boss and Rope probably. We haven't actually tested that, but I imagine that would be good enough. Because they were... without Boss, it should be like an auto loss, but Caleb and Azul were able to like have pretty close sets against Pikachu anyway, so I feel like a couple extra cards I would be able to beat them, and then those cards are pretty good normally anyway. So you can kind of tech Reggie to beat whatever you want, because it's bad matchups. It doesn't have a lot of bad matchups, but you can't really commit to all of its bad matchups, because that's just too much space.
So going into Salt Lake City, you were ready for Ice Cube as one of them, but like, what specific decks were you like worried about? What were the ones that was like, okay, we need to worry about this, and obviously like, did that pay off? I'm gonna assume it did, but elaborate a little.
Yeah, so for Peoria, we thought that it would be the best deck for Peoria, and none of us made top eight, but we were all really close, and we're like, okay, well, we could probably run this back, and then the fact that no Reggie's made top eight probably works in our favor a little bit. And then the two things we were worried about were Ice Cube and Gudra, and Palkia is like a 50-50 normally, so we're just like, okay, well, we'll just take a 50-50 there, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot you can really do about that anyway. And so the fact is, like, the thing about Reggie's is its matchups are good. Like, that's what it has going for it. So it only has a few bad matchups, so we're like, okay, well, if we can tech for one of these and just, like, lose to the other one, that's fine. And Ice Cube, we figured, was, like, just too easy. It's, like, too easy for any deck with Palkia or Mirage Gate to play Ice Cube. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But it's just, like, such an easy thing to do. And a lot of the top players did play Reggie at Peoria. And it did have a lot of day two spots. So, like, okay, well, it's just too easy for them to do this. And it completely auto-wins you. Like, Gudra doesn't auto-win you. It's bad. It's not a good matchup. But Ice Cube you can't beat it. There's nothing you can do. So we're, like, okay, well, we can just play like one card to beat Ice Cube and then have like an unfavorable to Gudra, and that's fine. And so that was the thought process.
No, I love that tech so much, because I would have played, had I been able to go to Salt Lake City, 100%. There was Ice Cube in my list with, you know, I was going to play the Lasso and Mirage Gate Twin Energy deck. And part of the appeal was, oh, I can auto win Reggie's in addition to having very good matchups against, you know, other stuff, right? So that was a genius tech.
So, yeah, the one thing was that you kind of had to play two cards, because you had to play the bad Lecky, but the bad Lecky is so good in other situations, and it's like a pseudo consistency card with the deck, because you need like an Lecky on your board anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of easy to justify that. Normally you wouldn't tech in two cards for such a fringe situation, but yeah, it kind of worked out. So I think it was a good idea going forward. I don't think you need the Yellhorn, but it's just a meta call, I guess.
So if people are presumably like, I guess Warsaw is going to be the last regional in this format, unless they announce a surprise Australia actually gets a regional. So like, people in Warsaw, probably not the best move to keep it in, because I don't think anyone played Ice Cube in Lille either, that I saw at least.
Yeah, no one. I mean, there were no Reggies in top eight there either. So like, I don't think it's that big. It's kind of one of those like reverse psychology loop things where it's like, are they going to play Ice Cube? Well, I could just play Yellhorn, so they probably shouldn't play Ice Cube. But then it's like, oh, well, maybe if they know about that, then they will. It's like, okay, but it's kind of silly, because like Reggie's is not like, it's still like a tier two deck. It's not like that big of a deal to begin with. Maybe, I don't know. We did get four top eight at Salt Lake, but I don't know.
That's like really good.
It kind of just comes out of like a 50-50 if like you think people are going to play Ice Cube or not, and then if the people who can play Ice Cube think you're going to play Yellhorn or not. So it's kind of like arbitrary to a point, I guess. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, no, like, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah,
yeah.
It's that decidui curve kind of thing.
Yeah.
Classic. Yeah, so I'm curious. You said Reggie's a tier two deck. I would have personally put it up to tier one now, purely because looking at the results at both Peoria and Salt Lake City, it had a 25% conversion rate into day two. And then in day two had some of the best placements, just like period of like all the decks that make it to day two. It was the one that was consistently the highest average placements. So why is it a tier two deck? Is that kind of like, I don't want to say fluke because tier two is a very good deck, but like, why would you put it at tier two instead of putting it at what the stats all say it would be, which is tier one?
Yeah, that's fair. So yeah, tier lists are, I guess, a little bit subjective. So when I think of like a tier list, I think I scale it with like popularity, and Reggie's was like, I don't know, the seventh or eighth most popular deck at Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that that makes it not tier one, but yeah, that's completely fair to put it in tier one as well. Like, yeah, either it's a little bit subjective, but tier one, I would be like Palkia Giratina, I guess, would be my tier one, but yeah, that's fine too, either way.
Okay, that makes sense. And then to go off the Reggie, so you mentioned like, okay, we knew Reggie had all these good matchups, but like, when did you decide to play Reggie? For, I guess we can go back to Peoria as well. Was this a night before, this is what we think the meta is going to be and this is the best deck for it? Or were you like prepped up and you're like, Reggie is the play, like 2 weeks in advance or whatever?
It was like the week before, so like a few days before. I'm like, I was just like thinking about it. I'm like, wait, Reggie's just like wins every matchup right now. I think we should test this. And Azul's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. And then everyone else was like, yeah, okay, I guess. Like, it kind of makes sense. And then we tested it a little bit. We really didn't test it as much as we should have, but we did test it a little bit. And it's like, okay, well, this is pretty good against Lost Box. We didn't test against the Crosswitcher version, which actually is good in the matchup. So, we tested against the Sableye version without Crosswitcher, and that matchup was really good. And then Giratina, I don't remember if we even tested that matchup, but... but we had some experience playing the deck like before, so like we tested it a lot for Milwaukee and NAIC. So and the deck gets better now because there were two main changes from the last format. It's like Gift Energy in, Flying Pikachu out. So there was Flying Pikachu obviously got second at Salt Lake, but for the most part for Peoria it was like very not as popular as it was before, because the deck got a lot worse with the new format because of like Giratina and like Lost Box and everything. So that just made Reggie a better call. So we just went and played that for Peoria.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Which, I mean, to go off of the like Pikachu got second, but it's not a meta call. On the RK9 meta breakdown, it's under other Arceus. Like, that's how little Flying Pikachu there is like in this format right now.
Yeah, it was probably like 1% or 2% in the tournament.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculously small. I mean, I don't know, because it's literally it's under the other category. Okay. So it's like, I don't know. There were five somehow.
Yeah, like, there were a few in day two of Peoria, but I don't think any of them cracked top 32. So we didn't think that we needed to worry about it going into Salt Lake.
Which ended up being like fine. So your team, I don't know, team's the wrong word, but the little testing group you got, right, is you, Azul, Caleb, and Kid, correct?
Yeah, and Dan, if he ever shows up. He played at Baltimore, so...
So, yeah. In theory, we got the fifth member in there.
Yeah.
You all have been dominating the past two regionals in this format. Are you ready to take the spot of the, like, Bradner, John Ang, Rahul group as the top group in North America? Can you make that claim now on the pod?
Yeah. I wouldn't say we were ever not that spot, but
okay, fair.
it's kind of subjective and like arbitrary, so it's like, you know. But yeah, they're really good players too. I'm just playing poke, and whatever happens. I'm just gonna play my best and not worry too much about what everyone else is doing. But I mean, to be fair, we didn't make top eight at Peoria, so.
Kid got bubbled, ninth. Right?
Kid bubbled. Yeah. Yeah, and then we were close, so like I bubbled 16. Azul was like on a winning in, I think. And yeah, Caleb actually lost his winning in to day two to Gudra, and he was like, I'm never playing this deck again. And then top eight in Salt Lake with it.
How did you possibly convince him after that then?
I don't know. I think the changes that we made, maybe it was the changes that we made to the list. It might have been that. I don't know. It just made too much sense. It was really weird, though, because usually there's, like... I feel like for Salt Lake, if there was ever a deck that's good for top eighting but not winning, it was probably Reggie for that tournament, which is really weird because that's not normally the case. That's normally, like, kind of scrubby. Like, yeah. Oh, like, I'm good to make top eight but not win. Like, so... Because you're trying to win the tournament. But obviously, we didn't know that going in. So, like, in hindsight, it was, like, the top eight... but can't win deck for that tournament.
Yeah, and those are normally the type of decks where it's like, oh, this is a cool, I hate to use the word rogue, but like the cool kind of rogue thing. But in top eight, it always, there's something that just bodies it, or people who are smart enough to like, oh, that's what your deck does. That's actually not that good.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of those decks that pop up.
Those are always some of the most frustrating ones, because like you jump on ladder and you're like, bro, this thing's sick. And then you play it with your friends and it's like, after a while, you're like, well, they won't know to do that. And then you run into the person who does and you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah, that's like, that's a huge hangout when we're testing a lot of decks, is like, oh, like this deck actually flattens Palkia unless they go with this one specific line and then they beat you every time. So it's like kind of like, are they going to know to do that? It's like, I don't know, but you can't really like play a deck, like put a matchup based on like your opponent not doing the correct thing. I don't know. It's kind of weird though, because most people probably won't in reality. But yeah, that does come up a lot.
Yeah, we're like, you're testing partners and you have figured out the weakness, and then it's like, okay, will my opponents figure out the weakness or not? Like, is this good or not?
That a good example of that would be the, like the Radiant Charizard deck, which I know you played a lot of.
Love that deck.
And then I was testing that. Yeah, it was. I was like testing that deck for Baltimore because I wanted to play it, and it did end up winning Baltimore. So it's probably we probably should have just played it anyway. But yeah, the Palkia matchup. I thought Flying Pikachu would be the bad one, but Flying Pikachu was actually fine. And it's like the Palkia matchup. They know what they're doing, and they have like one of like two cards, like either Clone or Quick Shooting, and they know how to play it. It was like really bad. It's like, oh,
the Clone is unfortunately very gross for that matchup.
Yeah, even without Cologne, I was testing with Quick Shooting, and Quick Shooting like completely dismantles that deck if you get it out turn three.
The other thing about that matchup, this is completely aside about a format that is now dead, but you could play. Did
rest
you
in peace, Radiant Charizard and Inteleon.
I love that deck. I'm still so salty about Worlds, bro. Freaking slow players. But anyway, so I figured this one out, talked with Cal Connor about it after. I was like, oh my God, this is genius. Why didn't I know this? But you can play around the Roxanne turn in that Palkia matchup by like just not choice belting the Charizard and using your goon pings and like the Aqua Bullet smacks. And did you ever figure out that line of play, and did it help, or was it still just like bad?
Yeah, it was Palkia. You always go for the Manaphy, like as soon as Aqua Bullet is a threat, because yeah, I found that too. Like the 20 damage on the Aqua Bullet is like so good. Against Palkia, but if they just get the Manaphy down, and their bench does become a little bit congested, but yeah, if they just get the Manaphy down, it's like it's really hard to do much. Yeah, I don't know. I'd never really thought about that specifically, like playing around because you're still going to get a Roxanne eventually, unless I guess you go two and then four at once.
Yep.
I was never able to do that.
It wasn't like super consistent, but it was consistent enough that it was a very valid win condition.
Interesting. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like I said, completely irrelevant now. Unfortunately, Charizard's dead. RIP. But last week on the pod, I had Stefan and Alessandro on, and I asked them a question about Reggies, and they both were like, can you answer it to the other one? Because like, I don't play that deck. So
I feel like Reggies would be the type of deck Stefan would really play.
Well, look at his Limitless page, it 100% looks like it, right? Because it's like he's got Mad Party on there, and he's got the Inteleon, you know, Moltres deck, and he's got there was another janky single prize. It's just like no one played that except you. But what would you say drew you to this deck that you and your whole squad, right, drew you as like, okay, this deck is consistent enough to play, while these other top players are like, I'm not even touching that with a 10-foot pole?
Okay, so it's funny that you say that, because pre-Peoria, my opinion on the deck was like, this deck isn't consistent. I was like, yeah, this is the least consistent deck I've ever played, but its matchups are probably the like among the best that I've ever played, and definitely the best in the definitely has the best matchups in the format, but its consistency is not good. So it's like, okay, well, it's just the best of three deck, Copium. And then I had like three unintentional ties, because you would break one of your games and it's a single prize deck, and it's really slow, especially against other single prize decks like Lost Box or Sableye. Yeah. I don't know. We always call it Lost Box, but like the only attackers are Sableye, Charizard. So just call it Sableye. I don't know. I guess Cram. I don't know. It feels like Box is more like Mirage Gate, and like anything could be in the box.
Yeah, like the Giratina is more of a box than towards Sableye deck.
So, but my opinion on the deck's consistency has improved a lot because all the cards are like so integrated neatly. Like all the search cards can be like Drago, and then like Drago can draw cards, or you have the capture energy and the speed energy, and those will get out your Regis or draw you cards. And the main thing is like actually getting a draw supporter, which you do kind of need to start out the game because you're not just going to have six Regis, three energy in your hand. But other than that, it's like pretty consistent because like it's very easy to get all your Regis. They all work nicely together. And then you have gift energy, which is basically just free. Like it's just like free whatever you want, free Roxanne proof. So I think the deck is like actually not that inconsistent compared to the rest of the format. I played against a bunch of Palkias in the past two tournaments, and they would always like brick half the time. So I'm not even exaggerating. Like it was half the time, like half of the games they would brick. So it definitely feels like it's more consistent than Palkia. And yeah, so it feels like it's not that inconsistent, but maybe like a little bit, not the most consistent thing ever, but it's not as inconsistent as like I thought it would be at first.
Okay, so you think like there's enough options between gift energy, the Drago, that like with enough reps it'll average out to, hey, this deck is not a pile.
Yeah, and I think our results reflect that pretty well.
And you're not wrong on that one, right? It's hard to argue with a bunch of top 32 pluses and then a bunch of top eights.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's, and then that, but again, its main strength is like the matchups, of course. So it definitely felt like I was kind of carried by the deck. Like I'm like, all right, all I have to do is like play these cards and I'm gonna win against most of the meta decks. And it's like it was very like not stressful because it's like, okay, well this deck's just gonna carry me because it beats everything when it works.
I want to call out something else while we're on the like Reggie team stuff. On Azul's podcast, he said he wasn't worried about top eight because Grant's a free dub every time. Do you have an official response to Azul?
I mean, yeah, it's like he didn't have to say it out loud, right? Like it's sad, but it is true. But yeah, it was that. Yeah, he's like, there's really nothing I can say to that. He's right. But my coping mechanism is I always clap him in online tournaments. So we played a bit since like I've started streaming and everything. So we played a bit online, and yeah. My record against them online is probably like 10-2 or something. So, yeah, that's my. But obviously, it doesn't matter compared to our regional top eight. Yeah, I was like, I literally could have bumped him out of top eight in our last round of Swiss because I was beating him. But I was more concerned with dodging Gudra. So I tied, and I didn't want to like wrench him out of top eight for no reason. Because, you know, we're friends and everything, so, yeah. But I was beating him in Swiss, but I chose to tie instead of win, so there you go. But yeah, he always beats me in top 8 of these regionals, which is kind of annoying. That's probably like the 4th or 5th one where we play in top 8 specifically. And yeah, so not great. I literally, he prized double rock game 1, and he got the heavy ball like turn 2. And he like Reggie gated and didn't get anything. I'm like, oh, both your rocks are prized, free dub. And then he gets the heavy ball next turn, and I research trekking shoe speed energy and whiff a backup Reggie to like a search card, and then I lose. And I'm like, okay, well that's just great. And then game 2 I brick, so whatever. But yeah, I'm not too upset about that one because literally I would have run straight into Gudra anyway and probably lost, so I really don't care too much about. I'm not too upset about that one, I guess.
It's that the same thing would have happened, right? Of like same 60 into the goo is,
yeah,
not the best.
Yeah, and then Caleb hit Flying Pikachu in top 8, and the two matches we can actually win are Palkia Giratina, and they play each other. So,
and then somehow the Flying Pika. No, I guess not somehow. I don't know if you've gone back to watch it, but somehow Flying Pika was able to take out the Giratina, which shouldn't really happen that often. But
I didn't watch it, but I think Radiant Gardevoir plus Espeon. Did he even play Espeon? He did play Espeon.
He did play an Espeon, yeah.
Yeah, so like theoretically, I was considering Flying Pikachu for the tournament, and theoretically you have Giratina, or not, you have Espeon and Radiant Gardevoir. So, and then Nicholas's list didn't play Vacuum, or I guess Vacuum probably doesn't matter, but he didn't play like modifiers.
Mm-hmm.
He might have played, I think he did play Vacuum. I don't remember. Modifiers, I guess.
Yeah, no belt.
The main thing. So like, choice belt, Zigzagoon, any of that stuff, or path even to shut off the Espeon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have a pretty good defense against that deck with Pikachu. You don't necessarily use the Pikachu, but use the Gardevoir and the Espeon. So they can't actually one-shot your Arceus, and they can't use the V-Star ability, I think.
I mean, they can. It's just,
I don't remember his exact list off the top of my head. But yeah.
No, I don't know his list off the top of my head either. I love Giratina, and it's like, I always want to root for it. So
yeah, that's I actually bias. Haven't played any Giratina until like the other day, where I was like, I guess I'll play Giratina on stream like for fun and just like ladder with it. And I'm like, oh, this deck's actually really fun. So yeah, that was like the biggest like hole in my testing, where like I just didn't test Giratina like at all. I don't know why.
Okay, that was gonna be my question. Like, did you not think it was gonna be good, or is it just like, I'll get to it eventually, and eventually never came?
Yeah, yeah. Also, it's kind of like the deck that like everyone's playing. So if we felt like it was the best deck to play and we were considering playing it, then definitely I would have tested it some more.
So you mentioned that you've started streaming, and if people haven't, you know, twitch.tv/trickroar, be sure to check out Grant play in mostly tournaments, which is like great. You want to watch, as a viewer of Twitch as well, you want to watch one of the best players in the game be one of the best players in the game. So the tournament viewing, amazing, 10 out of 10, go follow Grant. But do you think that has helped you do things like pick up Reggie's a week before and be like, yeah, I can handle this, because you play so many random decks because you're on stream? Or is the way you play on stream the way you would have played if you never started streaming, of like, I'm just going to pick up random decks and yeah, sure, let's give Metagross a try, or let's give Stonedurner a bunch of reps, or okay, sure, let's do some Reggie stuff?
I think the main use for me, the main utility that I get out of streaming, is I mainly use it as like proof of concept for decks. So like, it's a pretty efficient way of like filtering like the good decks from the bad decks. So like after a few games, like I'll be like, okay, well, this deck's clearly no good, or this deck is worth exploring some more, and then I'll do that on my own time. But I think the tournaments are like a fairly good like litmus test of if a deck has any merit. Obviously, like, you take the online tournaments with a little bit of a grain of salt, but as far as like the meta, like, they're fairly representative, with a little asterisk by Reggie's because there's no gift energy on PTCGO. But aside from that, yeah, I think it's fairly good for determining like if a deck is like at least has a little bit of merit. So I kind of use those as like trial runs, I suppose. But yeah, I as far as if I can pick up a deck, I kind of would do that anyway. Mm-hmm. Just pick up a deck like the week before and play a few games with it, I guess.
Okay.
I'll just play whatever deck I think is the best positioned for a given tournament. I'll play it regardless of if I have 100 games or 0 games on that deck.
So at what point, because when someone's new, we obviously recommend don't do that, right? But then,
yeah,
at what point do you like know as a player, and this is partially asking for myself, honestly, at what point do you know as a player where you're like, I can just pick up something because I've been playing so long and I've had so many experiences just playing the Pokemon trading card game that I should feel confident taking this deck that I played 5 games with 2 days before to a regional?
I don't know. I think it might be kind of like on a like a scale, like it might be like a spectrum of like weighing like how many games of this deck have I played and how comfortable am I with this deck versus how good is this deck, and you kind of have to like maybe balance the two out.
Mm-hmm.
So but I guess your question is more of like, at what point is it, how good is this deck versus how much have I played? This doesn't matter. This is the only thing that matters.
Correct.
And I don't know. I guess you just have to be very familiar with like the meta and like what you're going to do with each of your matchups. Sometimes you can theory them, and if your fundamentals are good enough, you can theory your matchups to where you can play the game normally pretty much like very well. And then for each matchup, you have like a game plan in your head that you can put into practice, even if you haven't actually done it before. But that's typically you want to play a few games against those kinds of matchups anyway, just to like make sure. But Yeah, you definitely need a lot of experience. I couldn't give you like a hard benchmark. Yeah. I guess it'd be different for each person. But yeah, you definitely need to have a lot of experience with the game. Typically, one thing that I will say is even if you're newer to the game and you're very comfortable with the deck, and as long as the deck is good, like it's a meta deck, like it's Mew or Palkia or something, if you're very good at one deck, that's probably good for a day two, honestly.
That's what worked maybe, for my first day too, where it's
yeah.
It's like I've played 100,000 games with this deck, so it worked out.
Yeah, if you're like good at like one or two decks, and as long as one of those decks is, you know, good in the meta, then yeah, it's probably good for day two. I think we've seen that a lot. So
you also mentioned some theorying, and this is every group has two people, and I'm wondering which category you fall into. One of them when theorying matchups is always like either my deck or my opponent's deck always draws absolutely flawlessly and the matchup is an auto win or auto loss. And the other one is like a little more realistic and it's like, oh, we're going to brick and this is going to be so weird. And you know, all this other back and forth. So are you the person who's like, every matchup's going to go perfectly for both sides? Or are you the person who's like, oh, it's all these little intricacies that we have to break down and all this other stuff?
Okay. That's actually, it's really interesting that you said that for this format specifically, mm-hmm. maybe more for the last format, the Astral Radiance format, but the Marnie Path decks there's kind of a lot of those.
Yeah.
And those decks, you can't theory your opponent drawing perfectly because your entire strategy is to slow them down with Marnie Path. Like, if you had a Flying Pikachu deck and you were against the Palkia and the Palkia draws perfectly, you're still going to lose to the Palkia. But the whole point is that you're Marnieing them like every turn or every other turn so they can't build their huge combos. So they're not going to draw perfectly. And that's why Flying Pikachu stomps Palkia. It's like the Flying Pikachu is good against Palkia, of course, but it's combined with the Marnies that you're using all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, you have like Inteleon decks, whereas if you're not disrupting their hand every turn, they are going to draw perfectly because all of their cards in their deck are wild cards. So it's a lot easier to theory against Inteleon decks, which again aren't as big now. It's basically just Palkia. Mm-hmm. Especially for the last format and the one before that, where there are like a bunch of different Inteleon decks. It's like, okay, well, they're always going to do this. They can always have access to this, this, and this. And if I can beat that, I will beat them because, you know, they can always do like, you know, like the max of what they can do every turn. It depends. So to your question, it depends on the deck. If you can really theory out that matchup or if you have to play, like sometimes against Marnie Path decks, you have to play like a bunch of reps to be like, okay, on average, how well am I going to draw off these Marnies? Because you can't, that's kind of hard to know in your head.
Yeah, that was one of the things I found with the Radiant Charizard deck into Flying Pika was the Marnies were worse than the Flying Pika for the deck.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good. So Marnie Path is also something that you've talked a lot about as like it's a valid win condition in this format. So I'm curious, do you think that's going to continue to move forward as long as Marnie exists? Like, you know, into the Silver Tempest format, is this going to be another thing? Like we're going to see Arceus plus something and these Marnie Path decks continue to be powerful? Or are we reaching the point where the card pool is so massive that this is just becoming a worse and worse way to win games?
Yeah, I think it really just kind of depends on the meta. Like, it was definitely better with, like, Inteleon decks being everywhere, because mm-hmm. Inteleon decks don't exactly lose to Marnie. But if you Marnie them four times in a row, then they might lose to that, because the whole point is, like, building up combos, and so you have to do, like, a five-card combo every turn with an Inteleon deck.
Yeah.
But if you're against, like, Reggie, that's one of the things I really liked about Reggie, is it literally does not care about hand disruption at all. It's like, okay, you can Marnie, like, oh, Lumineon for Roxanne, that's cute. I have a gift energy. And it's like, oh, well, even if you cross-switch me, I still have Regidrago's ability. So even if, you know, there's a gift energy on the Regidrago, maybe I won't get the gift energy, but I'll get the Regidrago or vice versa. So it's like very, very resistant to that kind of thing. And then I guess decks with B-Barrel are sort of like the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't as popular anymore. But yeah, if you have B-Barrel, you more or less don't care about hand disruption. But yeah, I think as long as like decks like Kyurem and Palkia are big, yeah. And even the Lost Zone decks don't like being... Like I was testing Lost Box against Mew, and Caleb literally Marnie me, Palpad, Marnie me again, and then Roxanne me. Or maybe it was like Marnie, Roxanne, and then Palpad, Roxanne. I was like literally so frustrated because I'm like, I literally can't do anything. So as long as like the decks that don't like being Marnied are around, so I guess the main ones would be like Kyurem and even Lost Box, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's why Tord put Guru in the deck, which is probably going to be more of a thing. But even that, you're still going to get Roxanne like twice and cry. So yeah, I think as long as those decks are around, then Hand Disruption is going to be pretty good. One thing, when I played against Nicholas Moffitt at Salt Lake, mm-hmm. I played him like 3 times in a row, and he always had the Chorus because he had Guru in his deck, which a lot of the Giratinas don't do. So he had the Guru, and he still had to hit like a 4-card combo, but was able to do it. So because like Chorus and the switch cards and the Kofis all kind of like work together like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that would be a big thing. And then Kyurem can sort of Guru, but if you Roxanne Kyurem, sometimes they have to Guru just to do their energy play. But even if they are able to, they still don't like Marnie, and they definitely don't like Roxanne. Guru doesn't really matter against Roxanne, I guess. So, I would say yes, as long as the decks in the meta are weak to absorption.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think everything you're talking about, like, every deck will fold to consistent hand disruption, except like, you know, B barrel or a decently drawn Comfy or whatever. I think that's a very good point, right? Like, nothing wants to be Marnied every turn. I don't think anything.
Yeah, exactly. To. Yeah, it's definitely really annoying. So it's like one or two Marnies, not a big deal, but it's like Marnie, Roxanne, you know, draw out of this 4 times in a row.
Another question, again, we have Silver Tempest coming up, so it's like the meta will change a bit and all that other stuff, but how much do you think this meta would evolve if we had another month, maybe another American regional and like 2 more European or something like that? How figured out do you think these current like Law Zone engines are? You know, we saw Israel Sosa with Leafeon come out, and we've seen a bunch of things do well online that are just, I'm just going to say random. They're to the weirdest list out there. Like, do you think this is an open meta, or do you think we are really closing in on Mew, Palkia, Reggie, and then the occasional like Goo, Blissey, etc.? It's like, where do you feel about this current meta?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, yeah, you would kind of have the Reggies like going up and down in popularity throughout the entire, however long the format is, because Reggies is definitely kind of one of those types of decks where it's like, you know, if the meta is prepared for it, it's not very good. But if the meta is not prepared for it, like, it's ridiculously good. So I think that there's kind of like always going to be that dynamic going on. And that's where my focus has pretty much been on this format. I've been kind of like dialed into the Reggie side of things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know why so many people are playing Kyurem, honestly. I don't think that deck would continue to be as popular, but maybe it will. I don't know. I think Kyurem's like, it's gotten a few top eights, but I think that's just because of the volume of people playing it. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the Lost Zone decks, yeah, I don't know. There's definitely some room for creativity with the Lost Zone decks. So whether Giratina is just like the best way to play it, or maybe there would be more creative things that come up, it's really just hard to tell. But yeah, that is an interesting question though.
Another thing that I'm throwing this by you, because this is a theory that I have and we've kind of talked about as a team, because you mentioned Kyurem, so this has to come up. We've seen Kyurem as the most played deck. We've seen Zoroark V-Star coming up there. These just go big, beat down decks. Giratina, I think you would agree with me, doesn't entirely fall under beat down because it has so much other stuff on it. You know, it can use Greninja, it can use Sableye, it can use this other stuff. But like, is this a post-pandemic thing? Of like, people are gravitating towards these fairly linear, I know Kyurem players are going to yell at me because technically, yes, you can do other stuff, but like, these fairly linear, I'm going to go boom every turn decks? Or is this something that always existed, and now that we have statistics and data behind it, we can actually see it happening? If that makes sense.
So like, I don't know. I think that the go boom cards are just really good. I mean, I don't know. I don't think Zoroark's that good, but Kyurem deck, I was like, when I played the Kyurem deck, I was like actually kind of like intrigued by like how not intuitive it is to play, because it's like, it's kind of like weird. You get like one Crobat and that's like all your draw, and then you have to like very meticulously like set up like where all your cards are throughout the rest of the game. And you're not going to nuke something every turn. Sometimes you're just going to pass or hit for 120. But yeah, it just so happens that right now the go boom cards are really good, and I would say Giratina is kind of like that, because you're going to there are a lot of games, like, sure, you have like other tech attackers, but there are a lot of games where you go 280 V-Star knockout, and that's like that's the game.
Yeah.
So I would say, just having said, those are the cards that are good right now. What was your question?
I was pretty much asking, like, I guess you're answering it in that. Is that a thing that's just like, this is what's happening? Like, these are the decks that people gravitate towards naturally, of like, they're going to go boom? Or is it that you seem to think it's a meta thing, which might be 100% correct? I literally just thought of this right now.
I guess you're kind of right, too. Like, I guess it's Kyurem and Giratina being like the two most popular decks. It doesn't necessarily mean they are the best decks, but yeah, they are pretty good. But it might be like slightly inflated because people like those kinds of decks, I suppose, but not too much. Like, it would maybe only go down a few percentage points if people were like equally playing every deck based on merit alone, I suppose.
And last thing, because people would be mad at me if I didn't ask it about Reggie moving forward, is it going to still be a viable deck into the Silver Tempest meta, potentially? Maybe not BDIF, maybe not something like that, but do you anticipate Reggie's going to stick around in some way, shape, or form?
Oh yeah, Reggie's is broken. It's so good. It's such a good deck. Maybe if for some reason a tier one deck comes out that flattens Reggie's, then that would be what would kill it. But I don't really think that's going to happen. It could. I usually eat my words when I'm predicting new sets and stuff. I'm like always wrong about cards before they release. Fair. Barring that, I think Reggie's going to be really good. And I did mention this earlier, but I'll say it again. The Reggie deck can tech for a variety of different bad matchups. And as long as its bad matchups are like fringe / tier two or below, you can cover like one of those and be like anyone you want and be completely fine, because you're going to naturally beat like the top decks. I think Reggie's is really good right now. It's going to be really good going forward. And then if you are worried about a specific matchup, you can tech for it if you want to.
I lied. One more Reggie question off of that one.
Okay.
Did you test Thornton plus Amazing Rare Yveltal?
I didn't personally. We like thought about it. I think it's really bad. I think that's like the go-to like scrubby tech, but I don't, so I'm not a huge fan of that, but we did think about it because it does beat Ice Q. Well, actually, that's not even true, because Arliss didn't play boss for Salt Lake City. So I was like, if they have a bet, okay, it beats alone Ice Q, right? If they have only an Ice Q in play and then you Yveltal them, then you win. But if they have any bench and you Yveltal them, they're going to rob the Ice Q back, get it back, and Mirage Gate to it. Or they're going to kill your Yveltal first, I guess. So they're going to do that, and then they're going to get the Ice Q back and win. And then for Gudra, they play Big Parasol. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe it would be good for Flying Pikachu now that if that deck becomes really big, because they don't play, I don't think they play Parasol. They play Espeon, but you play Path.
Yeah.
But you play Path in your deck anyway, so you would do that. We did like think about it. If like you could kind of like cover two matchups with it at once, then maybe it would be worth it. It is a really funny card. It's like a cool card, but it's like, it's just so hard to use because you have to get it in your discard pile, and then it's really telegraphed. But if you wait to get it in your discard pile, then you need like Yveltal plus way to discard it plus Thornton plus like an attachment for turn, mm-hmm. because you can only get like a twin and like two Auroras. So you would need like an Aurora for turn or a twin for turn. It's just like a lot of work. It's either a lot of work and it's telegraphed, or it's even more work and it's not telegraphed. So it's like not the most reliable thing ever. And then I think the things that you would want it for don't even like lose to it straight up. But it is funny though. It's like it is definitely interesting that you can Gigas to like a Reggie and then have like four energy on any attacker with Thornton. But yeah, there just wasn't any like room to play it, I guess.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when, as you mentioned earlier, you're already beating most of the meta. So it's like, what are you going to attack when you're already taking fate?
Yeah, I mean, the deck already has six different attackers, or seven if you count both Lucky. So it just naturally has like a bunch of different attacking options anyway.
Grant, congrats on the finish at SLC. And this is not the last time we're going to hear from you for sure on this season. And hopefully. If people want to hear more from you, where can they find you? And do you have any shout outs to give?
Follow me on Twitter at TrickRoar. And I stream sometimes. I haven't been streaming as much lately, but I still try to be like somewhat consistent.
We had a GLC control the other day, or Shock Lock the other day, right?
Yeah, that deck is so fun. I love that deck. It's probably miserable. It's probably super miserable for everyone who's got to play against it, but it was like so much fun to like come up with that deck and like optimize it, and it's really fun to play. But yeah, twitch.tv/trickroar. I'll play a lot of the late night tournaments, so like standard format tournaments on Tuesdays, and then sometimes at other times. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, I'll shout out the crew, Azul and Kid and Caleb, for Reggie Squad and doing well with the deck and working on it and everything. And and Poke Beach. I'm working on a Reggie article right now, so I pretty much will say everything that I said here. But yeah, but yeah, I write articles on Poke Beach. I try to make them as competitively relevant as I can, with like lots of matchups information and stuff. And yeah, shout out to Lake of Rage, and thanks for having me. It was fun.
It was great having you. And myself, you can find me Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at @Mellow_Magikarp. Please rate and review the pod wherever you listen to them. Check out Grant on Twitch for sure. 10 out of 10 watch, if for no reason other than the occasional salt. So if you watch me, you enjoy the salt, and you're missing it while I don't stream, go watch Grant. It's just as good. It's been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We'll catch you all next week.